When you wash your child's hair or put cream on your face, you're rubbing in chemicals that may or may not be safe. Welcome to Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. I'm Salwa Khan. The term cosmetics is used to describe beauty, skin, and self-care products that we use every day. This includes all makeup products, sunscreen, shampoo, conditioner, deodorant, toothpaste, and more. These items are produced using a variety of chemicals. Unfortunately, this category of products has very little oversight from the government. For information on the safety of chemical ingredients, we depend on organizations like the Environmental Working Group, or EWG, which provides research and information on many of the chemicals we encounter daily. The EWG is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization with several areas of interest, including farming and agriculture, personal care and household products, toxic chemicals, water, and food. As I stated earlier, you may think that cosmetics only includes makeup. Kaylee Bynes, a senior scientist for chemical safety and toxicology at the Environmental Working Group, says the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has a definition.
So to get a little technical here, the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, or the FDCA, which is what gives FDA its authority, actually has a definition for cosmetics. So it's, quote, articles intended to be rubbed, poured, sprinkled, or sprayed on, introduced into, or otherwise applied to the human body for cleansing, beautifying, promoting attractiveness, or altering the appearance. So very technical there. But it can be a little bit confusing to consumers who, when they hear the term cosmetics, really are thinking more about makeup products like lipstick or mascara. So generally, I use the term personal care products to be a bit broader in my descriptions.
Okay, so personal care products encompasses cosmetics?
It does.
What are some personal care products?
Sure. So to go back to the FDCA definition of cosmetics, personal care products can be a little bit tricky just because they might be cosmetics or they might be regulated federally as drugs. So drug personal care products include things like sunscreen, over-the-counter eczema cream, and mouthwash. But like I said, generally, I use personal care products as a really broad category to encompass the products that you use to take care of your health or your appearance in a lot of different ways. So in addition to makeup, I'm talking about shampoo, lotion, toothpaste, deodorant, products along those lines. And the reason why I think it's important to use this broader term when having conversations about this area is because sometimes when I talk about cosmetics, people think, oh, I don't wear makeup, so this doesn't really apply to me. When really consumer product safety is a concern for all of us, and it does affect everyone.
Right. I mean, even if it affects children because they're being or using things like shampoo or conditioner or toothpaste or maybe even cream.
Exactly.
Right. Or even, does this include baby care products?
It does, yes. Baby care products would be included. So like you said, lotions, shampoos, powders, anything like that.
So the Environmental Working Group has highlighted several toxins found in these personal care products, including parabens, heavy metals, and oxybenzone. So let's get an idea of why they're in the products and what effects they have on us, starting with parabens.
Parabens are a class of chemicals that are used as preservatives most frequently. So preservatives are really important in preventing microbial growth in personal care products. Obviously, no one wants mold growing in their products, especially in products with high water content. So parabens can be found in a range of personal care products, including shampoos and lotions, for example. Some parabens are endocrine disruptors, so meaning that they can affect your body similarly to hormones. And as we know, hormones regulate a lot of different systems in our body. And so when there are chemicals or ingredients that have hormone effects, that can be a concern because there are a lot of health effects that can be related to, you know, your body modulating with hormones. And so some studies have shown parabens specifically being related to hormone-dependent cancers like breast cancer. And then there are also concerns about developmental health effects, thyroid problems, things of that nature. The good thing is that industry has begun phasing out parabens, and sometimes you'll see things like a paraben-free claim on a label, which may or may not actually mean paraben-free. Still check the ingredient disclosure. But this group of chemicals is concerning because it can be used so widely, so that even if you're reducing your exposure in some areas, it's still possible to be exposed in others. And that's why we really encourage you to read the labels of your products, see if it says paraben anywhere, to make sure that you're informed about what you're actually applying to your body.
But on the label, it may not say parabens. Is that right?
Parabens is a class of chemicals. There are many different types of them. Most of the time, when they're disclosed on a label, they're going to use the word paraben somewhere in that descriptor to explain them. But yes, there are many different kinds of parabens, and some of them are more strongly associated with endocrine disruption than others.
Is anyone looking for something we could use instead of parabens?
We do some work on what's called alternatives assessment. So, what can we use instead of what's being used? And preservatives is always a big question because obviously, if you're trying to use something to prevent microbial growth, you do want it to have some antimicrobial qualities, which can sometimes be associated with health effects. And so, trying to find the right preservative is always a question for industry, but also for environmental groups as well. Making sure when we're moving away from these things, we're not saying don't use preservatives. We're saying let's find a better preservative for these products.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan here with Kaylee Bynes, a senior scientist for chemical safety and toxicology at the Environmental Working Group. We've talked about parabens, but what about heavy metals that are found in our personal care products?
So heavy metals include substances that you're probably familiar with, arsenic, lead, mercury. And exposure to heavy metals has been associated with cancers, organ damage, and neurotoxicity, to name a few health endpoints. Heavy metals are tricky because they occur naturally in the soil, and so they're often contaminants and ingredients rather than something that's intentionally added to a product. And so they're often a concern in mineral ingredients like you might find in pigments. Like an eyeshadow pigment for palette, for example, which is why having purity standards for ingredients is really important. And the other thing about heavy metals is that we also want to consider product type and use. So, for example, obviously we want to avoid lead, but lead is especially concerning when ingested. So, when we're looking at products, we have more concerns for lead contamination in an oral product like a lipstick than we might for something that's applied dermally and won't be absorbed. And so, those things also to come into consideration when we're talking about standards for cosmetics and cosmetic safety.
What metal might you find in eyeshadow?
So, mineral pigments, to get those colors, a lot of times you're using a pigment derived from a mineral, so like a rock, even. And so, when you're getting something from the earth, that's when there's a lot of potential for heavy metal contamination, which is when we start looking at, okay, how do we purify this ingredient? How do we make sure that there are standards so that everyone's trying to meet these purity standards and not just using, lead contaminated eyeshadow palettes, things like that.
Right. And is that so? That is something that obviously you're putting on your eye, on your eyelid. Is that not being absorbed through the skin?
It can be absorbed, and especially like because the eye is a mucosal membrane, it can that does have more absorption than just the skin itself. And it can be absorbed through the skin. It's just a lot harder for that to actually get into your body, compared with an oral product like a lipstick.
And then oxybenzone, what is that and where do we find it?
Sure. So oxybenzone is a UV filter, so it blocks UV radiation. So it's mostly found in sunscreens. It's really readily absorbed through the skin and may cause skin rashes, and again, is another endocrine disrupting chemical. So with all of those, fun health effects that you find with those endocrine disrupting chemicals as well. So there's some research that it could be associated with adverse reproductive effects, although much of that data is from animal studies. It's a lot harder to reproduce in humans. And oxybenzone also, just from the environmental standpoint, contributes to coral bleaching. So sunscreens containing oxybenzone are not considered reef safe. And so we recommend mineral sunscreen lotion with zinc oxide or titanium dioxide instead of oxybenzone, both for the human health effects, but then also for those considerations for the reef as well.
Does titanium dioxide make things turn white in color?
Yes, yep. So it's
Okay.
sometimes used as a pigment, and it also can be a UV filter as well.
And it doesn't have any harmful effect.
So titanium dioxide is really interesting because you don't want to inhale it and you don't want to ingest it. So inhaling it in particular is associated with lung toxicity, as can be found with multiple minerals. But if you're applying it directly to your skin as a sunscreen dermally, then it doesn't really absorb and it's not going to have those lung effects that you would find otherwise.
Because I've seen that on food packaging, on like on food products as
Yes,
well.
food packaging, we actually are opposed to titanium dioxide. EWG has done a lot of work on titanium dioxide as a food additive because there are some concerns around ingestion and toxicity there.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan here with Kaylee Bynes. She's a senior scientist of chemical safety and toxicology at the Environmental Working Group. What health effects do these chemicals have on us?
Endocrine disruption is a concern more broadly, just because so many of your body's functions are controlled by endocrine activity and hormone activity. And so things that mimic endocrine or mimic hormones like endocrine disruptors, like oxybenzone or a lot of the parabens, those are concerning because of all of the health effects associated with them. So a lot of times you see associations with hormone-related cancers, with reproductive outcomes, things of that nature, although there can be other effects also. And then heavy metals is more on the side of cardiometabolic issues, other organ toxicity, and then sometimes also some cancers too, although the mechanisms for the cancers are different. So instead of endocrine disruption, where it's hormone-dependent, with heavy metals, you'll th see things like oxidative stress or impacts to the DNA itself, which is a little bit different.
Scientific studies on chemicals in personal care products is ongoing, but there are so many chemicals combined in so many ways, it would require a massive number of studies to determine what effects they have and in what combinations. Data may be available on one chemical in a particular product, but not on all the others. Meanwhile, we consumers are left trying to read mostly incomprehensible product labels as we try to figure out what is safe and what isn't. I asked Kaylee Bynes what we can do to limit our exposure to chemicals in products we use daily.
So unfortunately, a lot of this comes down to consumer education, which isn't fair because the burden should not be on consumers to protect themselves from harmful chemicals, especially when they're legally being used. However, I also try to look at this as an empowering tool because it's very much a knowledge is power situation. Yes, you do have to be informed about exposure sources, but once you are, you can take actions to limit your exposure. So, for example, there's a great study out of Berkeley called the Hermosa Study, where they actually had teenage girls switch out their products for paraben and phthalate-free products. And they measured their actual excretion of these chemicals and found that the levels of the chemicals in their bodies went down after this switch. We've also seen in a study last year, Darkey et al., that found that not only do the levels go down, but they actually found that markers of breast cancer decreased when paraben and phthalate levels decreased. So there are studies to show that making these changes for yourself can actually reduce your body burden of these chemicals and potentially even your health effects, associated with them.
And now the environmental group has several guides that help consumers, to avoid these toxins. Tell us about that.
Yes, so we have a lot of guides. Our mission is to help inform consumers so that they can live a healthy life in a healthy environment. So really our research touches on a lot of different areas of chemical exposure reduction. We have our Guide to Healthy Cleaning, which talks about cleaning products and ranks our cleaning products based on an A to F scale, with A being the safest and F being the most hazardous. We have our Healthy Home Guide, which talks about things in your home, so carpeting, painting, appliances, things of that nature, and how to make sure that you're picking sort of the safest and the least exposure producing ingredients and products for your home. We have a guide to sunscreens. We have a tap water database that talks about, you can look by your zip code and talks about which contaminants you might have in your drinking water. We have our shopper's guide, which talks about pesticides and produce. And we also have our skin deep guide, which is our personal care products database. So quite a lot of opportunities to educate on these topics.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Sawa Khan here with Kaylee Bynes, Senior Scientist for Chemical Safety and Toxicology at the Environmental Working Group. And there are two more chemicals that the Environmental Working Group has identified, which are PFAS and phthalates. What are phthalates and where would we find them?
So phthalates are also a class of chemicals, like some of the chemicals we spoke about earlier. They're used as plasticizers and fragrance carriers. So basically that means they allow plastic to become more flexible. So when we're talking about personal care products, they can make nail products less brittle, for example. And as carriers for fragrances, they're in a lot of personal care products, like anything basically with a fragrance, but you can see them in lotion or shampoos, things of that nature. And like some of the other ingredients we talked about previously, these are also endocrine disrupting chemicals and have been associated with a number of health effects also. So developmental health outcomes for children exposed to phthalates in utero, which is really concerning, you know, what a mother is using during pregnancy, then has an effect on the baby later on. And then also associations between phthalate exposure and reproductive effects, cancers, cardiovascular disease, metabolic disorders. There have been quite a lot of studies. It's sort of a fairly well-studied class of chemicals that are similar to parabens, have been sort of a movement to get away from some of the phthalates in products because there was actually a large push from consumers to say, hey, we really don't want these in our products. We want to find products without them. And so that has been causing a bit of a market shift there.
And then let's go to PFAS. What are they and where do we find them?
Sure. So PFAS or PFAS are per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. So this, again, is a class of about 15,000 chemicals. So what is really honestly scary here is that with what is going on with these chemicals is that once they started being studied, there were claims by industry that, oh, only some PFAS are having health effects. Don't worry about the others. And then scientists, as they were studying and testing, were finding more and more and more. And so of these 15,000 chemicals, you know, only a handful were studied at a time. But they started realizing that all of the chemicals in this class are associated with similar health effects. So they're carcinogens and endocrine disruptors. They've been associated strongly with kidney cancer, with breast and testicular cancers, hypertension, decreased fetal growth, changes in immune response. So there have been vaccine studies where basically kids who were exposed to higher levels of PFAS had less reaction, less, I guess, immune response or antibody creation in response to vaccination, which obviously is very concerning. And then even liver and thyroid effects. And so these are really a very concerning class of chemicals, and more research is coming out about them. And they are found in a lot of products. When we're talking not even about just cosmetic or personal care products, they're in waterproof clothing, they're in nonstick pans, they are just all over the place. but when we're talking about cosmetics in particular, you might find them in waterproof makeup, like mascaras. You might find them in ingredients with a propellant, so a spray or something that's pushing the solution or the formulation out of the bottle, or in ingredients that melt at room temperature or have skin conditioning properties. So I've seen them in lotions, mascaras, shaving creams, eyeshadow palettes, lip liners, shampoos. They really can be in quite a lot of products. And so this exposure, plus exposures from food, from water, and other personal care and other consumer products, it really is very, very concerning. I would say this is probably the class of chemicals that I'm most concerned about.
What are PFAS derived from?
Sure. So these are also man-made, and they are basically chemicals that have carbon fluorine chains. And so you can make these chains longer or shorter. But studies have found that really the health effects are the same. But the idea is that they were created to make things waterproof and nonstick. And so really anything that you could think of in terms of applications has been used. And another one that you may or may not have seen is AFFF foam. So this is aqueous film-forming foam that is used a lot in firefighting or in military installations. And that's also been a huge source of PFAS.
Right. And now the PFAS apparently are in our water supply and in our own bodies.
Yes. Unfortunately, CDC found that 97 to 99% of people have PFAS in their blood. So everyone pretty much is exposed to these chemicals, which is no wonder because they're so widely used. And in our water supply specifically, it can be direct pollution. So there have been instances of chemical dumping from industries that are using PFAS. Then there's also been indirect pollution. So products going down the drain that have PFAS in them, AFFF foam soaking into the groundwater after it's been used to put out a fire, anything leaching into the soil, or when they add some sorts of soil or manure to agricultural fields, PFAS has been found in that also. And so there are really a lot of ways to get into the groundwater and into the water supply. And PFAS are really difficult to remove and even harder to break down. So it really is this sort of never-ending problem that is now on all of us to figure out how to solve.
And they were used for nonstick coatings on pots and pans.
That was one of the first uses. Yeah, if you have seen the movie, the Mark Ruffalo movie with Dark Waters is what it's called. That's a really good introduction to PFAS and what's going on there. Basically, what sounded the alarm was a lot of cattle dying on a farm and kind of sent a lot of people wondering, what's going on. And it turned out that there was chemical dumping of PFAS. But then there were also a lot of studies of workers in these factories with PFAS having a lot of adverse birth outcomes and having cancers. And so it's really this honestly quite frightening and disturbing story.
Is there more than one manufacturer of PFAS?
There are many. DuPont and 3M are the ones who get a lot of attention for this because they were identified sort of at the beginning of PFAS becoming part of the public consciousness. But there have unfortunately been a lot of spin-off companies and other companies as well that are using PFAS.
And so they're also found in our oceans, is that right?
Yes. Unfortunately, they are quite prevalent. They've been found in icebergs. They are very difficult, as I mentioned, to break down because of the stability of these chains. And so that's why they have their nickname forever chemicals, because once they're out in the environment, it's very hard to clean them out. And then once you get them out of something, it's very hard to figure out what to do with them because they're
Right.
very difficult to break down.
So if it's in the oceans, would it be in fish that people eat?
Absolutely. And in freshwater fish as well. There have been a lot of studies. I believe EPA has some data on fish sampling and what it looks like, especially for people who are catching fish for subsistence fishing or catching fish for fun and, cooking it at home, whether there's a risk of high PFAS exposure from that as well. Actually, EWG has a PFAS in wildlife map and some PFAS in water maps as well on our website, EWG.org, that shows really how this is distributed across the whole country and really the world too.
Are PFAS banned?
It's a little bit piecemeal. There is federal action going on the PFAS action plan, but it's been a long time coming, and a lot of advocates say that it's not enough or that it's going too slowly. Many in the environmental community are recommending what's called a turn off the tap approach. So stop using them because we don't want to create them in the first place because then they become this problem. And so you'll see a lot of voluntary bans or sometimes state level bans that are getting rid of them. But again, because of this it's this class of 15,000 chemicals, it has to be written very carefully so that we're not just banning, the top five that people are aware of. There have been decreases and things like PFOS and PFOA, which are very common PFAS and some of the original ones that were studied in recent years. But because, again, it's such a big class, it has to be this sweeping regulation to say, don't add PFAS to any of these products, any kind of PFAS. And so we've seen that getting some traction in some states and definitely getting more traction on a federal level. But still a lot to do. People are being continuously exposed while we're waiting for this problem to be solved. So it needs a faster response for sure.
So is the wise thing to do not to use any kind of nonstick pan for cooking?
So I personally don't use any nonstick pans. Technically, what is said about nonstick pans is that they are less likely to expose you to PFAS as long as they're intact, so no scratches, and as long as they're not heated to an extremely high level that some people argue would not be reached by normal cooking. Personally, I don't find it to be worth it to use them. And also, I don't want to buy them and then have these PFAS still be in the use of creation and being part of the exposure that the workers making these pans are exposed to. So I personally just used cast iron for the most part, or stainless steel. But that's one way. And then generally, just in terms of other ways to avoid PFAS, if a fabric or fabric treatment says stain resistant or stain repellent, that could often indicate the presence of PFAS. Ingredients on packaging that has required disclosure, like a personal care product ingredient, if you look for the term fluoro, F-L-U-O-R-O, that usually is indicative of a PFAS being used in that product. And then things like reducing consumption of takeout. You mentioned plastic containers earlier. That's another source, food packaging, of PFAS in certain instances. So reducing takeout, replacing disposable food containers with glass. And then also to go back to the water discussion, we do have a water filter guide on our website that highlights different water filters and how effective they are at removing PFAS. So I always like to say when I have these conversations, though, that our emphasis is really on exposure reduction. It's not likely that you'll be able to get rid of all of your exposures across the board, and it's stressful to think about trying to do that. And so I always recommend prioritizing the actions that are most feasible for you and starting there, and really, you know, exposure reduction being the goal, not exposure elimination.
Do you ever feel sort of overwhelmed by this sort of torrent of bad news about all the chemicals we're exposed to every day?
Absolutely. I do a lot. I think my family, especially, I'll tell them things like, I don't want to know. But I think what I do to keep myself going is just thinking about this is consumer education and empowerment. And you shouldn't have to be a toxicologist to keep yourself and your family away from some of these chemicals. And so my goal is really get the information out there in as digestible a form as possible so that people know how to make decisions and at the same time advocate for change in industry and change at the governmental levels to get rid of some of these. Because I think there is progress. We've seen progress in getting rid of some of these chemicals and in the environmental health sphere as a whole. And so just continuing down that road of, you know, these are battles that we have to fight, but we're going to keep going. And we're ready to work.
Thanks so much to Kaylee Bynes with the Environmental Working Group, and thanks to you for listening. Until next time, this is Salwa Khan signing off for Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. The views and opinions expressed on Mothering Earth do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of this station.